Welcome aboard this week's edition of Sport Flight, FYI. You're listening to the BKS of Sports, a sport talk with a different flavor as we discuss the good, the bad, and even sometimes the ugly world of sports. Piloting today along with myself, James Hill, will be Sean Bush out of Chicago with Stats Inc. LLC, and unfortunately our partner out of the Queen City, Nicole, is unable to be with us today. But I think we'll survive, Sean.
I think we can handle it. She keeps us on the tight leash so we can go ahead, roam around, kick up her feet, have a good time. As long as we clean up the place before she gets back.
Before we get involved with everything, I want to remind the people that Sport Flight, FYI, is sponsored by UrbanCollegeSports.com. That's UrbanCollegeSports.com for your information on HBCU, their schedule, scores, homecoming dates, classic locations, and all the dates of those classic locations as well. Once again, UrbanCollegeSports.com. Some of the topics that we will discuss today are the greatest NFL player. The retirement of Jerry Rice has sparked that conversation. Who was the greatest overall player? Jerry Rice being, in my opinion, the greatest wide receiver. Some people consider him the greatest player in the NFL. That's a debate that we will have. Also, with the situation in New Orleans and in Mississippi, the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina, if you look at, on our website, you'll see an editorial that we put on the website with regards to the NFL. Yes, the NFL did contribute or has contributed $1 million to the situation in New Orleans. However, it's my contention that the NFL has missed the boat with their $1 million. It should be considerably higher. And, as most of you are aware, this past weekend we were able to sit back in our easy chairs, open up our favorite can of beverage. On Saturday and even this week, this past Sunday, college football has returned. What we're going to do, instead of discussing the top 25 teams and how they fared on the first weekend of college ball, we're going to talk about the fact that there are 7 new head coaches at Division I-A programs, and we're going to talk about those coaches, such as Steve Spurrier with South Carolina, Charlie Weiss at Notre Dame, Urban Meyer at with the Florida Gators, Les Miles taking over for Saban at LSU, Dave Wannstedt leaving the ranks of the NFL and going to the collegiate ranks, taking over at Pittsburgh, Tyrone Willingham packing up and moving to the West Coast, so to speak, taking over for the Huskies, the Washington Huskies. He may have the most daunting task of everyone, as Washington was 1-10 last season, as well as Greg Robinson taking over at Syracuse. And this will be Greg Robinson's very first job. And perhaps a number of you watched the game between Syracuse and West Virginia this past weekend. Also, we will do our predictions for the first weekend of the NFL, which is upcoming starting this Thursday with the Oakland Raiders. Randy Moss's Oakland Raiders traveling to the Northeast.
Yeah, facing New England.
Facing the Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Will the Patriots be the same with the loss of their two coordinators, Charlie Weiss, as mentioned earlier, in Notre Dame, and Romeo Crennel taking over the reins with the Cleveland Browns? I mentioned earlier a daunting task by Tyrone Willingham at Washington. It will also be a very daunting task for Romeo Crennel in Cleveland.
You ain't lying about that. And also we should tell the audience is that normally we do the show once a week, but this week we're going to bring out a special podcast, and what we're going to do is we're going to devote the entire time as far as previewing the NFL season. We're going to go team by team, conference by conference, division by division. So we're recording this right now, and it's Tuesday evening, so the regular Sports Flight podcast, Episode 5, will be available for download come Wednesday. But On Wednesday, we're going to actually record the NFL podcast for Sports Flight. We're going to try to do these special ones usually right before the season starts. So it will be ready for download hopefully Wednesday night, definitely Thursday morning, so you can hear it before, get you ready for that New England Oakland game for Thursday night.
Yeah, we'll preview the NFL by conference and also by division. Who will win the Super Bowl in 2006? And, of course, we're going to do our player profile, players from the past, those players who open the door for today's black athletes. We choose to call it Moments in Negro League History. We will be profiling former Los Angeles Dodgers catcher Roy Campanella, better known as Campy. And, of course, we will give you our aficionado question of the day. All right, let's get back to the first topic that I mentioned before, the hurricane situation and the NFL. For some of you who have read my editorial, you know my feelings are that the NFL were sorely lacking in their $1 million. It's not that I'm sure the people of New Orleans and that particular area are not grateful for any amount that they receive, but are you kidding me? $1 million from the NFL, that's as if I contributed $1.
Well, yeah, and you're right about that. It was amazing to just hear that basically I know that there's an owner, an NFL owner,
a baseball owner,
contributing the same amount. Now, last time I checked, a league, the hell, it consists of many teams. So how is a league putting the same donation as one or two teams?
Especially the league, which is the most profitable professional league in this country, perhaps in the world. I believe they just signed a six-year contract somewhere in the neighborhood of $13 billion. That's billion with a B. And if you were to take the net worth of all 32 NFL teams, you probably would exceed some $20 billion. Once again, that's billion with a B, and you are going to contribute $1 million. So I'm thinking that this was just an opening. This was their initial contribution, especially in light of the fact that the New Orleans Saints are a member team. This is part of their family.
Right.
This team is going to be displaced basically for all intents and purposes for the entire season. They will not be able to go back into the Superdome. And what were you telling me earlier that you just heard today with regards to the Superdome?
I heard the Superdome, it's quite possibly that might actually be torn down. So that even brings up a very big potential problem, because the New Orleans Saints were, now granted, they were from time to time threatening to move, but the Superdome was going to be always there. Now, the simple reason that the Super Bowl could possibly be gone, and then you have to build a new stadium for them, where are they going to be playing at? Are they going to still play on the road or play at LSU, or do like what the Houston Oilers did, play in a makeshift home for maybe one or two seasons before their new stadium comes about?
I don't think the NFL has made that decision as of yet, because their first scheduled home game is the second week in the season, because during the first week in the season they travel to Carolina and they play the Panthers this coming Sunday.
Yeah, and then earlier and then as of yesterday, the NFL announced that the Saints' first home game will be played against the Giants at Giants Stadium, and it's going to be moved from the 18th, which is Sunday, to the 19th of September. So it's going to be basically
a
Monday night doubleheader, where they're going to show probably the first half of the game, starting at 7:30 Eastern time of that Saints Giants game, and then when 9 o'clock comes, the regularly scheduled Monday Night Football game, the Saints game will then be moved from ABC to ESPN. So that duration of the game will go on. You can still see that game on cable, but the regular Monday Night game will be played at its original time.
Well, explain to me, why are they even televising the Giants-Saints game on Monday night?
Because it's football. It's still football, and by all.
But I mean, it wasn't scheduled to be shown on TV.
Well, it was going to be shown. As far as in New York, in New Orleans, and possibly
New York. Maybe that's why.
No. Pump the brakes. Pump the brakes.
Because
you know
it was going to be shown in New York.
Okay. No. Pump
if
the brakes.
They were in New Orleans. They were going to be shown in New York.
Pump.
So are you saying that it had it been some other team? Oh, let's say Kansas City.
No,
it would not have been shown.
Actually, no, I'm not. I'm not saying that at all.
No, I'm saying it.
Because you got to also look at it. The NFL is the only league that shows 100% of their games on TV.
Well, I'm referring to network TV. In this particular instance, it's going to be on ABC, which will be the last year for the Monday night contest to be on ABC. You're referring to an NFL package or a combination of ESPN and some other networks?
Yeah, because regardless, the game was going to be shown, and the game was going to be able to be seen nationwide. It's just that a smaller nation will be able to see the game, see the Alamarca games, if you get DirecTV and the Sunday ticket.
No,
so it was going to be shown.
The game wasn't going to be shown nationwide.
Yeah,
not on network TV.
Not on network.
On the NFL package, all of the games are shown.
But that's what I'm saying. So it's still going to be shown. But the game was going to be moved. The game was going to be moved to Monday. You might as well broadcast it. I don't think it has nothing to do. And you know, I do sometimes have a New York bias as far as things because I do believe certain things are done differently because of New York. But I don't think that has nothing to case for.
That's my belief. Had it been any other team at any other location, I don't believe it would have been. Neither team is a marquee team. Neither team is expected to make it to the playoffs, nor were either team of any consequence last season either. The Saints were, 8-8? The Panthers were, the Saints were 8-8, and the Giants, where were the Giants last year, 5-11?
Something like that.
Yeah.
But you know what? I think the simple purpose is, I think this is the first time that New York is actually on the field, and it really doesn't have nothing to do with New York. It has everything to do with the New Orleans Saints. I don't care who they was playing. They could have been playing St. Mary of the Blind.
So are you saying as a result of the situation that they now may take the moniker of America's team as opposed to Dallas being America's team?
They might take it as they might take the moniker as
on a temporary basis.
They're still doing their job. We can go ahead and root for them because of the situation. Because hey. The players at some point in time are living in New Orleans. Some might be living there full time, but during the season they are living there, and they trust me, they got affected too. There's players who don't have a home. There's probably a lot of players who do not have a home. So, you know, I think everything, just like you, deep down inside during 9/11, you were rooting for the Yankees. You were rooting for the Mets. Maybe the Mets more so the Yankees, but you were still rooting for those New York teams who was going through that ordeal during that time. So, in essence, I think America will be rooting for the Saints. And if you think about it, what better nickname to have during this type of situation than Saints?
Well, any speculation as to where they will ultimately wind up for the balance of the season? I've heard San Antonio.
San Antonio is the most. I think
I've
San Antonio.
Heard Baton Rouge. I would think that the NFL would like to keep them as close to home as possible so that they can be, to some degree, a rallying point for that community, although they have evacuated New Orleans, and there's no indication as to when it will be repopulated. But New Orleans will come back.
Yeah, I think right now, as far as stadium-wise and business-wise, because let's be honest, it's still a business, San Antonio will be the most obvious choice for them to be playing their games for the remainder of the season. It does not make no sense for them to play all their home games on the road. That's stupid. That will be worse than the Montreal Expos and the travesty that they made them go through for a couple of years.
Well, that didn't stop the Major League Baseball from doing that
for years. But you got to understand, who is the commissioner there? Our favorite person, Mr. Magoo. Tiger Boo has a lot more sense than that. So I think they're going to go ahead and give them a temporary basis.
Well, I don't know. I have a tendency to question his insight in light of the fact of only providing $1 million donation for this relief fund.
Well, that's true as well. But also remember, we kind of had this situation with basically with the Houston Oilers when they got sold going to Tennessee. They played at Vanderbilt for a year before their stadium got built.
Sure, it wouldn't be totally unusual.
So it wouldn't be totally unusual at all. So I see them going. I think I see them going to the Metrodome. I mean, to the Alamo Dome. I'm sorry, in San Antonio, and play their home games there. And if anything, it shows it gives San Antonio an opportunity if they truly want to pursue this, a chance to possibly get a NFL franchise. So, once again, you have a chance for an audition as well, even though it comes through a very ugly situation, but it also could help the growth of the NFL.
And so, Sean, tell me, what would be the impetus behind Tagliabue and the others in authority to review the situation as it pertains to New Orleans and the aftermath of Hurricane Katrina in order for them to change their monetary donation from $1 million to, I would suspect, several million dollars.
This really has really stuck in your craw.
Yes, it has.
I've noticed that because you keep, and it's not a bad thing, and I think it's a point to go ahead and bring it up. Because you have to look at, I think if anything, it's going to be a public outcry. For the simple, you have to look at it as,
well, that's why we are doing that.
That is
as
true.
A public outcry.
But you want to go ahead and
once again, we want to state that I'm sure the people are very grateful for the $1 million. It's just that those with more is expected of them.
That is true. And you look at some of the other contributions by teams. We already talked about the New York Yankees contributing $1 million. We talked about the Titans owner contributing $1 million and also doing a match for anybody when they start collecting for the games up to $1 million. You look at the Milwaukee Bucks. They contribute $500,000. The Washington Mystics, the WNBA team, the owner, Sheila Johnson, she contributes $500,000.
Correct.
Now, I'm sorry. If anything should slap you in the face, and you know how much I love the WNBA, but if a WNBA owner puts up half, then the most popular and the most profitable league, that's embarrassing. So, you know, I'm hoping, too, that this was just
an oversight.
Well, not even oversight. I think they went ahead and said, we're going to go ahead and do this. And then they seen everybody else do it, then we're going to have to do more.
Well, at least they did respond immediately, which is something that the government was lacking in doing for these unfortunate people in New Orleans. And something else that was brought up, I was watching a program by Oprah Winfrey. She suggested and was requesting that people stop calling them refugees, and her term was survival.
And that is the thing, because they're not refugees, they're survivors of this. And, you know, this is a little bit, we are going a little bit off topic because of it, but this really affects all aspects of our lives.
Sure.
It affects,
I mean, sports is a diversion from that everyday mundane existence. It takes us away from the problems of the day, you know.
Biggest problem is if you don't have power and electricity, sports is the last thing on your mind.
Oh, the people who were affected by this devastation in Louisiana as well as Mississippi and perhaps some parts of Alabama, this means absolutely nothing to them. Of course not. You know, this is not a necessity.
So,
not at all.
But as far as everything, you know, I do hope not only not only just the NFL. We're talking about everybody. We're talking about everybody. You've seen cries of players saying everybody should give, every player should give $1,000. Some went even so far in saying giving $5,000. And if you look at both of those amounts, let's be honest, both of those amounts are pretty much chump change to the three, let's go ahead and say the four major leagues. The NHL, now the NHL probably can't give no money because they just came from stop being broke. You know, they're just happy to get a league.
You mean stopped being broke?
Well, they are broke.
I mean, anytime you sign, well, what's that network they signed with, OLN?
Well, they signed with OLN for a simple reason. OLN was the only one that opened.
Do you have OLN on your cable channel?
I don't have it on my cable channel, but I will have it on DirecTV when our DirecTV comes out.
All right,
so
I hear you.
So that's going to be very interesting. But if you look at another thing, I think everybody needs to step it up. The NBA... they stepped it up. They saying they're going to make a contribution of $2 million. And then they also helped $1 million, which will be going to the American Red Cross. So you look at the Players Association, the Basketball Players Association, they're going to put in $1 million as well. And then so everybody should be able to, I think everybody should go ahead and do this in some form or fashion. I think every player should go ahead. $10,000 is honestly, that's like $100 for us. I'm just being honest.
Right.
Even the folks who are making the minimal salary. The minimal salary in NBA is $375,000.
But one last word before we leave this topic and move on to college football this past weekend and some of the, one particular upcoming game this coming weekend in college football. Just remember to keep those people in your prayers, and if you can contribute or do anything, please do so.
Well, and you know what? And also, you don't have to give money.
No. Your time, your service.
You don't have to give money.
Absolutely.
You go and just go in your closets. If there's something that you pulled out and said, damn, I don't remember this, give it to somebody who's going to wear it. We have became hat racks. We don't like to give nothing away. If anything will tell you, there were babies walking around with wet diapers.
True.
It doesn't even matter. You can go to the store and buy a little care package or something and ship it out. You don't necessarily have to give money. Money is nice, but those people need food, medicine, other perishable items, so please do so. I know I did. I got some big clothes. Somebody's going to be able to wear them. So I'm having absolutely no problem going through my stuff, packing it all up, and giving it to Salvation Army or the Red Cross or something like that so these people can have something nice to wear and have, you know, and stop having wet clothes.
Right. Just keep those people in your prayers. And as I mentioned earlier, New Orleans will be back. It will take some time, but they need your prayers and they need any other assistance that you may be able to offer. Moving to the next topic, were you surprised at any of the games this past weekend? The top 10 teams all won. A number of them won in a very handily manner. Specifically, I'm talking about how Texas won. Same thing with some of the other teams.
UCS.
Yeah. Ohio State.
USC, I'm sorry.
Yeah, Ohio State. And then there were some games that were borderline dog games, primarily because the offenses were not in gear, and you have to keep in mind, I guess, that it was the first game of the season.
And I take it we're talking about that old Miami Florida State game that they hyped so much.
As well as West Virginia and Syracuse, their quarterback play wasn't that great either, especially in the first half.
Well, one thing for sure, one thing you did, you was actually incorrect on, all the top 10 teams did not win. The biggest one you
were
talking
about
is Oklahoma.
The upset of Oklahoma by TCU.
Yeah.
TCU.
Which is basically their biggest upset in 45 years. So congratulations to TCU. But you look at it, one of the things that was pretty much the focal point And the glaring thing that happened of just college football around was all of these new quarterbacks. You know, eventually, because you're in college, some college teams are pro teams, but eventually they have to leave. These players have to leave. And there's been a lot of influx of new quarterbacks. And especially, you looked at that Miami-Florida State game, and they hyped that up big game because of the rivalry. That was a terrible game.
Kyle Wright did finally get into rhythm just before the half for Miami. But the two quarterbacks, Weatherton and Xavier Lee, and only Xavier Lee was only out there for one series.
Yeah, he was out there for one series.
For Florida State, if Florida State's defense had not come to play, and if there hadn't been some miscues on the kicking game of Miami, that game could have easily been won by Miami going away.
Yeah, and but it also you look at it, the special teams play was atrocious as well. The only good part of that game.
I thought the kicking game for Florida State helped them to win their game. Helped them to win last night. Obviously, the other aspects of the kicking game were not that great. But as far as field position, punting.
That was the only good part of the kicking game was the punt. You're exactly right, the punt. And then the only other glaring good thing about the game was defense, because defense was played well on both ends.
Yeah.
Miami gave up 9 sacks, which is the most sacks that they gave up in team history. And you got to go back, you know, that's a lot of history. And as everybody wanted to see an up-and-down type scoring, but with these quarterbacks, because that first quarterback, Florida State, Weatherford, he was just butt ugly. He was throwing some ball. He was throwing balls to some places. It's just like, is this your first time ever playing?
Well, it just
football.
It just, in some respects, it looked like a high school game. In some respects, it looked like especially.
It looked like a Pop Warner game
from the quarterback position. It did not reflect the high profile schools that they were playing.
But
for.
It also tells you. When you have somebody doing their first start, Weatherford had thrown 9 passes in his whole college career. You got Lee, who's he's just a redshirt freshman. You have you have very little experience, and your first game is on ABC. I'm sorry.
And it's against your major rival.
It's going to be against your major rival. I'm sorry. Yeah, there might be a chance my pants might be a little bit heavier because I have dumped in them. So, yeah, I'm going to be a little bit nervous.
Well, the other thing that is still pointed out by those Florida teams is the fact that speed kills, and they still have lots of speed.
Florida has lots of speed to give to every state in this country and still be the best as far as products of football. How they turn out football prodigies is just unbelievable. Wow. When you have 3 receivers on your team that can go 4-3, you in some trouble.
And generally they are always out of Florida. Speaking of Florida, there's a new sheriff in town in Florida, specifically with the Florida Gators. He is the matinee boy, Urban Meyer, bringing his high-octane offense to Florida.
Yeah. You know what? And out of the 3 teams in Florida, I'm thinking Florida, University of Florida, the Gators, are going to be the ones who cause the most damage because they – as we saw, both of the teams, Florida State and Miami, have some major issues at quarterback.
Mm-hmm.
University of Florida does not have that problem. They have Chris Leaks who's going to throw in this offense. He might throw for 5,000 yards. And you know what? I don't think that's an over-exaggeration.
If he's not injured, I mean, because that's a wide-open offense.
Yeah, the only way he's going to get injured if he tears his rotator cuff for throwing the ball so much.
No, that offense leaves him wide open for sometimes he empties out the backfield a lot with Urban Meyer's with his system.
You can't
argue with his system.
It
he's won at Bowling Green. He's won at Utah. He's considered to be a great recruiter.
Yeah, so. And for the simple reason, he knows talent. Because the reason I say that is he turned down his dream job. He turned down Notre Dame.
Right.
Why? He knew there was no talent.
Well, I mean, Charlie Weiss, they didn't look like that under Charlie Weiss.
And see, this is my area.
That Notre Dame is that good or Pittsburgh is that bad.
This is my area of knowing about Notre Dame. But Notre Dame is really bigger in the Midwest than the only team that probably has only two other teams that are bigger or in the same level as Notre Dame in the Midwest, that is Michigan and Ohio State. But
you mean as far as name recognition?
Name recognition and getting the prospects. Those three in the Midwest are probably the biggest. You look at Notre Dame, and you've seen how Notre Dame did so well against Pittsburgh. They're talking around here like they are now in the national championship hunt.
Well, I mean, you know,
y'all
fans are fickle. Fans is short for fanatical. That's what fans
right.
are.
So to answer your question, is Notre Dame that good or Pittsburgh that bad? Notre Dame has surprised people because they adapted to his system, but Pittsburgh is worse for simply one reason and one reason only.
Dave Wannstedt?
You got it. Dave Wannstedt is a great assistant coach. He is a terrible head coach. He proved it.
You would have firsthand knowledge of that.
Absolutely. He proved it. He's a bad – just because you're a bad pro coach doesn't mean you can't be a bad college coach. And Pittsburgh is going to have one of those – they're going to have those years. I would not be surprised if they don't make it to a bowl. And I'm talking about they won't even make it to, like, the GNC Bowl. That's, like, the first bowl that comes out. They won't even make it to bowl season.
Well,
now,
You're saying Pittsburgh will not equal their record from last year, which was 8-4?
They're not going to get to a bowl.
Okay. Because Walt Harris went out to Stanford, so that's why they
had They're not getting into a bowl. And if I'm not mistaken, aren't they playing in the Big East?
Yes, they are.
Yeah. I don't care everybody defected. They're not going to win a bowl.
Well, Louisville is projected to be the winner of the Big East.
Well, Louisville is projected to win, and some people to go undefeated and go for the national championship.
Well, primarily because they're in the Big East, so they get an automatic bid.
Exactly.
Right.
But if you look at Notre Dame, will Notre Dame make it to a bowl? Yes. Well, for a couple of reasons. Notre Dame has the easier requirements to make it to a bowl. All they got to do is win 6 bowl games, and they're automatically into the BCS bowls.
Well,
that's what a lot of people don't realize.
As you often tell me, slow your roll, pump your brakes.
But see,
they've got a tremendous test coming up next Saturday.
And I was just about to bring that up. As everybody,
they come back to reality because they are going to be in the big house in Ann Arbor.
Everybody is talking about
those guys with those funny helmets.
Everybody's talking about national
Michigan,
championship.
Michigan.
Yeah, Michigan is going to slap all these Notre Dame fans.
So you think they're going to pimp slap them?
Pimp slap? You're being nice. It begins with
slap.
A B slap. Yeah, this is going to be a major B slap.
And let me play the devil's advocate. And if that does not occur, and if Charlie Weiss and Notre Dame come out of that, if not a victory,
oh my
playing
God.
Michigan close,
they can lose by 3 points. Notre Dame can lose by 3 points, and people are still going to talk about Notre Dame being in the hunt or going to be their back. If they win, ESPN is going to talk about Notre Dame for at least until Wednesday.
I think the largest contingent of graduates from Notre Dame must live in Chicago.
Yeah,
There's a large contingency of Notre Dame fans out of the Chicago area.
Yeah, because that's why we hear about so much. How do we hear more about a college team that's out of state from us than our own state teams. We don't hear about Illinois. Illinois is bad.
If you're referring to football, Illinois hasn't fared that well. And that
even though they played a great
Rod
game,
Turner is no longer there.
Even though they played a great game Saturday against Rutgers, granted it went to overtime, but it was still a great game. They came back and really fought tooth and nail.
Did you listen to yourself?
As far
you
as
said,
what?
You said they played a great game against.
I did say even though it was Rutgers. I did say that. Even though it was Rutgers and a Rutgers player is going to be nominated for an ESPY for hurling over a grown man. Yeah, I said that.
I just wanted to make sure that you knew, because you were trying to indicate that perhaps they might be better.
No, I'm not saying Illinois is going to be. I'm not going to be a pundit and say Illinois is going to win the Big Ten title. No, but they're playing. They are a lot better. Remember, for the past couple of years, Northwestern was better than Illinois. Northwestern ain't good at nothing. But having graduating lawyers.
Neither is Rutgers. I think Rutgers' record was 4-7 or something to that effect.
It was a lot better than Illinois. That's all I'm saying.
Well, as we mentioned, that's why Ron Turner is no longer there, and he is he's the offensive coordinator in the NFL now.
See, you can be bad and move up in the world.
That's right. You can still get promoted, but still talking about those new coaches for Division I and how they fared during the first week. Steve Spurrier, he had a slight scare.
He almost had a heart attack. He thought he was in Washington. Like, didn't I leave the pro game? Because that was not in the script. Somebody forgot to give that other team that script.
And you know, he is going. My belief is he's going to have a tough time recruiting out of Florida, which at one time was a hotbed for him when he was coaching at Florida.
Okay, I'm sorry. Let's look at the comparison. Let's compare and contrast. I can stay in Florida or go to South Carolina. Florida wins.
Oh, absolutely.
That's going to be the biggest problem. They got three choices to stay home or near home, at least in their home state in Florida, where then you got to go South Carolina with the good old ball coach. Now, granted, he's going to be throwing the ball all over the place, but still South Carolina. So they're going to have to do real good. And last time I checked, he came back to the ACC.
Yes, he did.
There's a lot of teams, a lot of coaches that are licking their chops to play South Carolina, who are a better team than South Carolina, and run the freaking score up. They are waiting for this to happen because – This is probably his worst team. I think even worse than the Redskins.
Well, you know, we've discussed Steve Spurrier. We talked about the success that Charlie Weiss had Saturday night. We've discussed Urban Meyer bringing his new offensive explosion to the Gators. And we also, you so eloquently pointed out how Dave Wannstedt can not only lose at the NFL level, but he can also lose at the college level.
And that takes great skill to do that.
The three remaining coaches that are new this season would be Les Miles at LSU, Tyrone Willingham at Washington, and Greg Robinson at Syracuse. And let's take Greg Robinson first with Syracuse. They played an ugly game this weekend as well.
Yeah, they did.
It's going to take some time for them to adapt to his system.
Yeah, it will. That's going to be the second hardest adjustment a coach is going to make of the new coaches. And we're going to get to the first one probably real soon.
Now, Les Miles has walked into like a candy store, and this team still has a lot of talent because he replaces Nick Saban, who ventured off to Miami to go to the NFL.
Saban did not leave the cupboards bare.
Yeah,
at the house. No, it's fully furnished, and it is ready to go.
Well, let me ask you something. Well, the fact that Les Miles is from the Midwest, will that affect him at all being in the South?
Coaching is coaching.
Okay.
But coaching football doesn't change because you are from the Midwest going to the South or going anywhere else. Coaching is coaching. And if you bring a good system, like Urban Meyer did, Urban Meyer was in the boondocks in Utah. Mm-hmm. He was in the middle of the forest in Bowling Green. But he had a good system. Now, he's at heaven in Florida. And he still has that good system. If you got a good system, you're going to work everywhere. Now, you take a bad system and take it somewhere, it's going to get worse. And we look at Dave Wonstead.
Hey, answer something for me. I was noticing as I was doing a review for this, and I was also looking at Ohio State. How is it that these large programs have so many home games? You know, out of the 11 games that Ohio State has,
mm-hmm.
seven are at home. Out of the 11 games that LSU has, seven are at home.
Well, you know what? It has, honestly, it has to do with the conference play because they rotate, you know, home and away. But then in some of these conferences, you don't play everybody in the conference. So there's a rotation in that. There's a rotation of games played, and then there's still a rotation with, even though you didn't play a team every year, you play them every 2 years, where you still go on the home and away situation. And then the non-conference games, well, the big schools are going to get most of their non-conference games at home because they're playing either lower 1A opponents who's looking for a big payday, or you playing a 1AA opponent who's looking for a huge payday.
Right.
So that's why a lot of home games. Look at one I remember was Nebraska. Nebraska doesn't play their first road game until mid-October. They got like 5 games they're playing at home in a row.
Well, it's nice to be big and bad.
It really is. It's a beautiful thing.
And the final coach in our carousel of seven, I really thought that he was going to start the program off on the winning note this weekend, and Air Force had to come back and deflate his bubble. I'm referring to Tyrone Willingham at Washington.
But a lot of people got to realize
he's taking over a very poor program.
That's
1-10
big
last year.
That's the big issue. You're 1-10. Just like I said, coaching is coaching. As long as you have a good program, it should work. But you also got to have the horses. Just like where in LSU the cupboard wasn't bare, well, here in Washington, they might not be bare, but something's still rotten and smelly in the cupboards.
Well, answer me this, because this has come up since Charlie Weiss and Notre Dame made Pittsburgh look so horrible this past weekend. He's basically doing it with the same players that Tyrone had from last season. Is Tyrone too conservative with his play? Is Tyrone not a good X and O's man?
Well, he wasn't. You can't say he wasn't an X and O man because he wouldn't have got the Notre Dame job from coming out of Stanford. He was a great X and O person playing with Stanford. As far as just the style of play was a little bit different. The style of play and also the huge, heavy, hard schedule that Notre Dame is notorious playing in. Now, once again, I'm not making no excuses for him getting fired, because guess what? There's plenty of excuses why he shouldn't have got fired. The simple reason that play every year, year by year, the play gets bumped up. Just like in the NFL, college football is about copycats. And if you see one system is working, you're automatically trying to copy it.
Well, that's
if
an
some sport. Some don't do that, you will fall behind. Now, in some cases, copycat doesn't even work. You look at Air Force. Air Force has been doing the darn wishbone for how many years? They've been doing it forever. They still, I think they're one of the few teams that still does the wishbone. In some variation, they either do the true wishbone or they do the flexbone, where somebody comes out off the tight end and goes in motion backwards into the backfield. That offense should have been negated in the 60s.
Well, you won't get an argument from me there. So wrapping this up, out of those seven coaches, who do you expect will have the best record of the seven, and who will have the worst record?
Easily, Florida's going to have the best record. Urban Mind, they're going to go to a New Year Day. They're going to go to a BCS bowl game. The worst record, I do truly believe, will be Dave Wannstedt or the coach from Syracuse.
Oh, so you don't think that it will be Willingham?
No, I don't think Willingham is going to. Willingham might be towards the low end of that spectrum.
But he won't be the worst.
Yeah, he won't get a medal. He won't be one of the top three worst records of that two. He might be a bridesmaid. He might be fourth, but he won't get a bronze medal.
Okay. As we move to our next segment, which is brought to you by UrbanCollegeSports.com. UrbanCollegeSports.com. This is where we will profile our former black athletes, our former professional players who open the doors for today's players. And as we profile Major League Baseball players, we look at the former Negro Leagues, and this is their story. We choose to call it Moments in Negro League History. Today we profile Roy Campanella, better known as Campy. Campy was best known for a 10-year career with the Major League Baseball Brooklyn Dodgers. Plying his trade with the Dodgers, Campy actually began professionally playing at the age of 15 years old as a catcher with the Baltimore Elite Giants of the Negro Leagues. During Campy's first season with the Elite Giants in 1938, Campy caught during the weekend as the backup to everyday catcher Biz Mackey. Biz provided professional advice and technical instruction to the young Campanella. In 1939, Campy left school and took over full-time catching duties, leading the Elite Giants to the playoffs. After playing a series of exhibition games versus the white major leaguers in 1945, Campanella was signed by the Major League Baseball Brooklyn Dodgers. Campy spent 1946 and 1947 in the Dodgers minor league system, being named MVP each season. Campanella joined the Brooklyn Dodgers mid-season of 1948. For the next 9 years, Campy was the Dodgers' starting catcher. Campanella and the Dodgers won the pennants in 1949, 52, 53, 55, and 56, also securing a World Series ring in 1955. In addition, Campy won 3 National League MVP awards over a 9-season time frame, while setting a single-season record in 1953 for catchers with 41 home runs and 142 RBI. Campy's career was cut short by a car accident in 1958, confining Campanella to a wheelchair for life. Campy finished his Major League Baseball career with 242 home runs and 856 RBI. Campy was inducted into the Major League Hall of Fame in 1969. Roy Campanella and other Negro League luminaries can be found in the Baseball Hall of Fame in Cooperstown, New York, and the Negro League's Baseball Museum in Kansas City, Missouri. This has been a Sport Flight FYI, Moments in Negro League History. Speaking of former Negro players, Negro League players in all leagues, whether it's baseball, football, or basketball, at one time before, let's say, the mid-70s, most of the football players came out of the HBCUs, the historically black colleges and universities, the Deacon Joneses, the Walter Paytons. Today, we're good if 5 players are drafted out of the historically black colleges.
Exactly.
But be that as it may, you know, when we go to a football game, not only are we there for the game, but we are there for the band, the partying, party.
Yeah, I've heard so many just sometimes the best part of the games is halftime.
Oh, and during the game, too, especially if you have a team that's not doing that well. I had the opportunity to attend Alabama A&M, and Alabama A&M at that time did not have a very good team.
Just was
Coach Cruz's era, and we would just party in the stands. But, you know, that was before the beginning or the initiation of the classic game. And I mentioned earlier that I was going to advise you of the upcoming classic games for this coming weekend, which will be Saturday, September 10th.
Yep.
Jackson State versus Tennessee State at the Southern Heritage Bowl, which will be in Memphis, Tennessee, the Southern Heritage Classic. Then Johnson C. Smith versus Benedict, that's the Palmetto Capital City Classic, to be held in Columbia, South Carolina. St. Paul versus Cheney State, that will be held in Cheney, Pennsylvania, which is right outside of Philadelphia, the Wayne Wilson Classic. And the final classic for this upcoming weekend will have Bowie State versus Morgan State in Baltimore, Maryland. That's known as the Masonic Classic. Those are your four classic games coming for this weekend. As I mentioned, the following weekend, 9-17, there are going to be eight classics. So that's going to be a big party time. Also, each week we provide you with, we try to stump you to some degree. We call it our aficionado question, Sport Flight aficionado question. This week, our Sport Flight aficionado question is, who was the first black manager slash head coach in modern-day professional sports? The first black manager slash head coach in modern-day professional sports. Was it A, Frank Robinson, B, Art Shell, C, Bill Russell, D, Lenny Wilkins, E, Oscar Robinson, or F, Larry Doby? Our final segment of the day before we let these good people go. Our picks for our first week of the NFL season. And, of course, we open up with Thursday night's encounter with the 5-11 Raiders visiting the 14-2 Super Bowl champion New England Patriots. Your pigskin pick?
You know what? I like Oakland. I really do. I think they're going to have, they're going to be the Rams, but just in the West Coast. They're going to be basketball on grass. They have the weapons. Just adding Moss just makes them more dangerous. But they have a great, they don't have a great defense. They have a better defense. Then they have. I had to stop myself.
Yeah.
They have a better defense.
They have a poor defense.
No, yeah, they had a poor defense last year. This year they have a much better defense. I'm actually going to go ahead and pick Oakland over New England.
Well, because they are the Super Bowl champs, they are playing at home. It's opening night. Bill Belichick always has something in his arsenal. He has lost his two coordinators, but even in light of that fact, I think the Patriots have to be beaten before I say that they will not make it back to the promised land, meaning the Super Bowl.
Now, hold on. I'm not saying they're not going to make it to the promised land.
All right. Well, that's,
but I'm saying as far as the 16-game season,
game,
they're not going to win every game.
Lose. Okay.
Exactly.
Now, my pick are the Patriots.
So okay.
You will go with the Patriots. I mean, I will go with the Patriots, and you will go with the Raiders.
Yeah, I see. I'm going to need to write this down because you're going to mysteriously have every one of them right. You ain't slick.
You think too highly of me.
Yeah, okay. You call that highly.
All right, Sunday. The Houston Texans, 7-9 from last season, visit the up-and-coming Buffalo Bills at 9-7 with their new quarterback, J.P. Losman, and McGahee being at full strength and healthy for, they hope, the entire season. Your pigskin pick.
I'm going to go with Buffalo. I just like Buffalo. I like what they're doing. McGahee is going to get 1,500 yards
all
this season.
All in one game?
Now, not all in this one game, but he's going to get 1,500 yards this season, and I think it's going to be a great start for that. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Buffalo.
My choice also are the Buffalo Bills.
Wow.
And just for the same reasons that you mentioned, Buffalo has an outstanding defense.
Yes, they do.
If Losman is a halfway decent quarterback, this is his first season. The second season as a pro, but his first season starting. And some people have indicated that he has nervous feet. and he likes to leave the pocket rather early. But if he can stay in that pocket, if he can find his receivers, who are good receivers, Eric Moles and the second-year player, Evans,
yep.
As well as McGahee to go to as well, and they have a good offensive line, I see the Bills being in the hunt in the East, especially if anybody falters in that Eastern Conference.
Okay, you can save this for tomorrow. You're giving too much away.
All right, the next game. The New Orleans Saints, after all of the turmoil and the troubles as a result of Hurricane Katrina, the New Orleans Saints of 8-8 from last season traveled to Carolina to play the 7-9 Carolina Panthers from last season. Your pigskin pick.
I'm going to go ahead and pick Carolina. I think their offense is mediocre at best, but they have a great defense. Especially, they got the best, I believe, the best front four in the league. And the Saints.
You've been hanging around me too long. Some of my good information is just rubbing off on you.
No, that's just common knowledge. I tell you that. And just the Saints. They've just gone through a lot for the past couple of weeks. They're going to go ahead and give it a valiant effort. I think it would be great. It would be a great story if they do win their first game. I just don't see it happening with Carolina, so I am picking this. I'm picking Carolina.
My pick, the Saints were 8-8 last year. Carolina fell off last season primarily due to injuries.
Yeah.
They are healthy this year, provided they stay healthy. I anticipate a good year for them, and I think they will open up with a victory at home versus the Saints, so I, too, pick the Carolina Panthers.
You mean on the road?
No.
No, you're picking Carolina. I'm sorry.
Yeah, I'm picking Carolina.
Sorry.
Yeah, the Saints are on the road.
Exactly.
Yeah. Our next game will be the Battle of Ohio, the 8-8 Cincinnati Bengals versus the 4-12 Romeo Crennel Cleveland Browns. Your pigskin pick.
I'm picking the Bengals because Cleveland is just going to have one long season, and it's just going to begin coming Sunday. Cornell is going to realize he is not in New England no more. So my pick is going to be the Bengals.
All right. The Bengals were 8-8 for the past two seasons, 2003-2004. I anticipate that they have improved as they attempted, going into the draft, they attempted to improve their run defense. And because of that reason and all of the offensive weapons that they have, they will be in the top five in scoring in the NFL. I have to pick the Bengals to defeat the Cleveland Browns.
That had to hurt you to say that.
It hurts me, but I'm
And you better be glad Nicole's not there.
I'm thinking with my mind and not my heart.
Yeah, you glad Nicole's not here. She would have been rubbing his hand.
My pigskin pick, the Cincinnati Bengals defeat the Cleveland Browns opening day in Cleveland. The next game, the New York Jets travel to Kansas City and take on the Kansas City Chiefs. The New York Jets were 10-6 last season. Kansas City Chiefs thought they had an improved defense. I don't know why they thought that. The only difference they had last season was Gunther Cunningham. They brought him back, who was once their head coach.
Exactly.
Which was a bit odd to bring him back as their defensive coordinator. Although this year they did improve their defense, and the one kid I'm hearing about more so than any other rookie thus far has been the linebacker, Derek Johnson, who a number of people are anticipating that he will be Defensive Rookie of the Year. Sean, your pigskin pick.
As much as I like the Jets and what Chad Pennington is going to be doing, I still like the overall balance that Kansas City has as far as their offense. The running game is just absolutely great with Priest Holmes. So I'm going to go ahead and pick Kansas City.
All right, my pick. They don't win in a very fancy way. Sometimes they make it even look ugly in their wins. More often than not, they have a balanced attack between their offense and defense. I have to go with Herman Edwards and the New York Jets.
Wow.
So my pigskin pick are the New York Jets. And you stated the Chiefs, correct?
Yeah.
Okay. All right. We travel out west. San Diego, to be specific, as the Dallas Cowboys, 6-10 from last season. They visit the surprising San Diego Chargers from last season at 12-4. Will Marty keep the ball rolling for the Chargers? Sean, your pigskin pick.
I really do like San Diego. I like how what they did last year. Drew Brees, I don't think that was a fluke. He's always had the promise of that type of play. Getting Antonio Gates back in the mix also helps. So I'm going ahead with San Diego. And also they got the best runner in the league in Tom LaDainian. So I'm going with the Chargers.
All right, Sean goes with the Chargers. Marty has always been a very good regular season coach. It's only when Marty gets into the playoffs that he seems to lose his magic.
And you should know that firsthand.
His magical touch. Yeah, I've been down there to witness them a couple of on two occasions. So with the Browns, so I'm very much familiar with that. I believe that the Chargers will continue to win. They have a very good defense. The offense, as you mentioned. Brees is a good quarterback. Now, whether he can do it 2 years in a row remains to be seen, but they do have the best running back in the NFL in LT2, LaDainian Tomlinson.
Yep.
So I, too, will pick the San Diego Chargers to rough up and beat the visiting Dallas Cowboys. Our next game, we travel back to the Northeast, and the Indianapolis Colts of Tony Dungy, 12-4 from last season, visit the Baltimore Ravens, 9-7 from last season. Sean, your pigskin pick.
I'm going with the Colts for the simple reason, as much as Ray Lewis is probably one of the scariest men on the face of the planet when he's out on the football field, they still don't have the offensive power, and Boulder is really on some thin ice. This is going to be his make-or-break season. The Colts, still the Colts, they got all their weapons, and now they signed Corey Simon to a deal to upgrade that defense. So I am picking the Colts to pretty much run over Baltimore.
All right, the Colts were 12-4 last season, as the Ravens were 9-7. However, I know you don't believe in preseason, but there is something to be said about preseason. It doesn't necessarily indicate that you are going to be a Super Bowl bound or playoff bound if you win all of your games, nor if you lose all of your games. However, the Colts were 0-5 this preseason, and Tony Dungy was none too happy. I don't think that they have forgotten how to score on offense, especially when you have people such as Harrison, Edgerrin James, Wayne, and most of all, Peyton Manning. I'm not certain that defense has matured anymore, even with the signing of Corey Simon. My thought on Corey Simon is he is still a good player, but I think he has plateaued. Now, whether he will realize greatness in Indianapolis remains to be seen. The Baltimore Ravens are always a good team, and always from the aspect of defense. And that will be no different in this upcoming season with their cast of characters, Suggs, Lewis. I
picked
the Ravens. I'm sorry.
You said Thugs?
Suggs.
Okay.
Suggs. I picked the Ravens to win their opening game as they host the Indianapolis Colts.
Okay, you officially have been smoking something.
And our final game for this opening weekend, the Eagles will visit the Atlanta Falcons. The Eagles 13-3 from last season, the Atlanta Falcons 11-5. Sean, your pigskin pick.
Yeah, this is probably the toughest one of all the games, and of course, that's the reason you left it last. The Eagles, with all the stuff that's been going on with them, they still play well, even with the whole stuff with T.O. The Falcons, they still one of the top games. This is going to be a great game. But if I have to pick one, I'm going to go ahead and go with the Philadelphia Eagles.
So Sean picks the Eagles. The Eagles were 13-3 last year, as mentioned earlier. The Falcons were 11-5. Most people are predicting that the Falcons or the Panthers will vie with the Eagles for the playoff spot in the Super Bowl for this upcoming season. The Eagles have had their turmoil this past season with the problem with Corey Simon, and they finally traded him. The situation, as everyone was aware of, with T.O. Some analysts state that they have a plethora of defensive linemen. Some analysts indicate that they are weak on the defensive line. Regardless of either, I think until Michael Vick begins to win games with his arm and not with his legs, I've got to go with what I perceive to be the better team in 2005, that being the Philadelphia Eagles. So the Eagles are my pick to defeat the Falcons opening day in front of the Falcons' home crowd. Those are our picks for this upcoming week. Remember, we will have a special edition this week with regards to the NFL preview, our predictions for the 2005 season. And we did not forget about our top five NFL players. We will add our top five NFL players with our NFL 2005 season predictions. So make certain that you join us this week with that aspect. Also, remember, if you need any information on anything with HBCUs, that you definitely log on to urbancollegesports.com. And remember, make each day your masterpiece. And in closing, never has so few owed so much to so many. Peace. We're out of here.